Hey everybody, it's Diane. It is Thursday, July 25th, and I'm here with a 3 o'clock group. So far we have Shirey and Linda and Susie and Brent and Holly. Who wants to start us off with celebrations?
I can do that. I should clarify, Holly's not here today. She had to work.
Oh, it's just you. Okay.
Just
well,
me.
We're glad to have just you.
Y'all are getting a bad stand-in, but I'll do my best.
Oh, come on.
Our celebration is Addie, this past couple of weeks, has kind of gone old school. She took it on herself to make some cookies and pop some popcorn and make some lemonade and take it down the road to the golf course and set up a little lemonade stand for the golfers with the idea of donating the money to the animal shelter. So we were happy to see her do that.
Awesome. Wow, what a nice thing. And I bet you guys celebrated with her too and jumped up and down. That's amazing.
We did.
Cool. Linda and Susie, what about you guys? You guys are just back from camp or something, yet I saw on a note.
Yeah, we are. Susie's going to share her celebration about camp, and then I'll share mine. Go, Susie.
Okay.
Okay, well, we were at the Hallowell Summer Camp in Michigan last week, and Gabriel was a counselor, or they called him a mentor.
Oh, wow.
But he's 15 now. It was our fourth year at the camp, and he got to be a big man on campus and take care of the younger group. And what was absolutely wonderful and hysterical was he couldn't believe how hard it was and what little monsters they were. And we said, yeah, they're just like you used to be. And he got that, actually. And he just said, this is really hard. But he loved it. And it was great to see him moving into a leadership role and still loving being with his people. He always loves to be at camp and be with kids like him. So it was a delight.
Awesome. Shirey, what about you?
So, did you say me, Shirey?
Yep, I did.
Yeah. Okay. I would say we actually kind of didn't have a great week, and so I was really thinking about that. I'm like, I guess. It's a pretty big deal that Chloe, she's finally starting to try to apply. You know, we've done counseling for years with her since her mother passed, and this is the first time that she opened up about it with the counselor, and she also journaled about it. So that was a pretty big deal in her being invested and actually trying to face this now. I think it's just taken a long time to get to that point. So I thought that was pretty big deal.
Part of it is emotional maturity and practical maturity and all those other sorts of things, right?
Right.
So you were
it's
last time.
Part of the bad week.
Anyway. So I was with you guys last month. So you were working on reaching agreement on what balance meant between you time and her time. How did that go?
She actually got very defensive when I tried to bring it up about what that meant for her. She just kept saying, I don't know what I want. And so I said, well, you don't have to decide right now. We can get back to that, and you can think more. Which the counselor actually suggested to me what might be better is to have her write a list of things she likes to do, maybe, because she doesn't really, I don't think she really knows what she's wanting or needing, you know. So that's where I think we're going to go next. It's just, well, maybe write a list of things you like to do, and maybe we'll go from there and see if we can address some of it.
Yeah.
So.
And Brent, what you guys were working on was summer expectations and some of those sorts of things. How have things been going with the schedule and that sort of thing?
I think it's going better. We've checked off some of our fun bucket list things, and I think Holly has tried to, if she's even used the terms, change perspective. She's tried to see the kids' point of view, and I think it's helped everybody kind of settle into the situation.
Awesome. Awesome. Glad you're seeing some progress. Linda and Susie, where do you guys want to take aim this week? Or I don't know, do you guys take aim on the same thing? Or do you take aim on different things? I don't know what you're doing in PSS these days.
We take aim on different things. Susie, do you have something you want to take aim on?
Actually, I was so busy trying to figure out what I was going to celebrate that I didn't even think about taking aim. So if you got something, go for it. And also, I stole the celebration part, so if you want to say something about that, jump in. Or if you've got something to take aim on, I'll jump on that.
I would like to take aim, I think, on Gabriel having some ownership around taking his meds. He's been really great about getting his summer assignments and getting some of his work done. I'm not sure if he has any ownership on his meds and whether they work or not. So I'd like to really look at meds with him because we're going to change his meds a little bit.
Okay, sounds great. Sounds great. So, and you said of ownership, so, you know, a little bit more independence around medication, and it sounds like also involvement and understanding, so that as you change it, you have some buy-in to figure out, is it working, is it not, that sort of thing. Is that what you mean, Linda?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Susie, you want to add anything else?
No, I think that's perfect.
Cool. Brent, where do you want to take aim?
I'm probably too broad on this, but we're still working, and this kind of is the rain on our celebration. We're kind of working on lying. Addie wanted to take some of the money she raised for the golf course and spend it on some snacks for herself. And we talked to her about that's not really honest. That's a lie. And I don't know if she understood that. I think sometimes she understands it, but she's too stubborn to admit it. We've had some issues with her just hanging on to a lie when it's clear, you know, hey, you're lying. It was you that did this. And then she's come back with, well, if I'm going to get in trouble anyway, I might as well lie about it, which, you know, we've gone round and round. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That only makes it worse. So I don't know if we're too broad there, but we're trying to take aim on being more honest.
Well, and I love the way you phrased it at the end. It's about, you know, increased honesty. I mean, these kids, we call it defensive dishonesty, and she actually described it really well. It's just sort of, well, I'm going to get in trouble anyway. I might as well, you know, I've got getting in trouble for this in one hand. I got getting in trouble for that, on the other hand, it, you know, which one feels better to me, and so it's hard. So, Brent, have you read the articles, a few of the articles on our website about why kids have a hard time being honest, or why kids lie? Actually,
I think I've read one, and Holly and I have talked about a bunch of them. She's talked about that a lot, that lying is the go-to a lot of times with ADHD kids.
So let's narrow in a little bit. So if you think about right now where she is, when, you know, there's several steps to this. It's like not doing it at all would be kind of the ultimate endpoint. Owning it up to it when she's caught might be another step. Being open to conversations about why it's hard to be honest might be a step. I mean, where do you feel like you are right now, and where's the kind of the next level of engagement with Allie?
I think I would like to see her own up in this, if we're going to take a step, own up when she's caught and see that it's not going to be the end of the world, whatever you did. Just go ahead and admit it. I think that's a jump off point.
Okay, so kind of how she handles it when you guys identify that she's been dishonest. This is where you want to take aim.
Right.
Is that right? Okay.
Right.
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. Shiree, what about you? Where do you want to take aim?
I mean,
I think I still need to work on Chloe, me and Chloe coming to an agreement about what spending time with her means, and we still need to figure that out and maybe make the list and then actually implement, try doing one of the suggestions and see how often she feels like she needs that. And then, yeah, I think that's still.
So that sounds like a clear action item that you got out of your conversation with a therapist. And it also sounds like mm-hmm. where you're taking aim is kind of taking a step up from that and saying, well, in addition to that, what else might I do to kind of continue this, to move this thing forward? Is that fair?
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Because I think that, I mean, it may be that this list is, the list is a great next step. And part of what you've got to get your head around is what's the step after that and then the step after that, because there's this continued sort of thing, which is one is finding ways to spend time together. And then the other part of it is finding ways for you to have time to yourself. Does that resonate?
Right, definitely. Which I will say, they're starting school in a few weeks, and that finding time for myself aspect won't get easier because they won't be home all day. So that, you know, that is going to make a big difference.
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. But it's so funny because different parents have different things about summer. I mean, my kids are 18 and 20, and I was saying to somebody yesterday, it's like, when they're home during the summer, it just makes me a little bit crazy, and it's harder to work, and it's harder to focus, and it's harder to do a lot of things, and
mm-hmm.
so it's
right.
It makes perfect sense. So part of what, you know, part of what I'm going to challenge you to think about is kind of like, what's going to make the next 2 weeks awesome, and then how do you get back into your habits quickly once school starts? Does that sound like a good challenge
right.
for you?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Awesome. So today we're talking about transparency and openness. And I think all the things that we're talking about today are great things to apply this tool to, because this is about honesty and openness and being transparent, not just with our kids about what's going on for us, but with ourselves, right? So there's a lot of times that our kids' challenges, part of what happens with the kids' challenges is that we take it the wrong way, or we take it personally, or our stuff kind of gets in the middle of it. And so being aware of kind of how your own point of view or perspective or experience kind of impacts what's going on with your kiddo is an important piece of this. And sharing your experience with your kid can be really helpful. You know, so Brent, I'm thinking about you, and it's this sort of, you know, kind of finding ways to share with Allie kind of how, when it's hard for her to be honest, it feels for you guys. And part of it could be about, you know, when you find it hard to be completely honest and open. Part of it is, like, if our kids are having a hard time sharing, you know, so this could be a compassion moment. So they're having a hard time with X. You can share when it's been hard for you for this on the same sort of thing. And also finding ways to share with them about how you're seeing their behavior, or how you're seeing a particular situation. This particular tool really kind of transformed my family life when I started kind of talking to my kids about how uncomfortable I was when I was raising my voice, because I'm a recovering yelling mom. I think you guys all know that. But it's just sort of when I started saying, you know what? It feels really crappy when I yell at you, and I want to work on changing that, and I need help from you. And just being able to say that and being open with them about my role in the change gave them permission to say, well, maybe we could do this that might help it make it easier so you wouldn't have to yell at us. And, you know, kind of you begin to work together to solve a problem in a very different way. So I'm curious how this idea of transparency and openness comes up for you guys.
I think it makes sense to, and it's funny, as I read this today, Addie has been saying that we have, she'll accuse us of being fake. Like, she was in the truck with me yesterday or day before, and I had a work phone call. And when I hung up, she said, see, that's what I mean. You're so fake. You're mean to me, but then you're so nice on the phone. And this is all for show. And it's part of it, I think, is an attempt to just get some banter going. So I just kind of don't fuel that. I've talked to her about it and said, no, this is me being nice on the phone. But right now she's real concerned, I think, with honesty from us and transparency from us. So I think I can work it into the conversation.
But what's coming up for me, in what you just described in the conversation between you and Allie, is that part of that is helping her to understand that two things can be true at once, right? So you can be mad at her, and you can find a way to put that in a box for a few minutes and still be nice to someone else. And so that you know, it's that self-management piece of it. So it might be a way of giving her hope that even if she, when she gets mad, it doesn't take over her entire world. Because a lot of times these kids, their emotions are so intense that they see it, you know, it's like, dad can be mad and still speak calmly. You can be upset and still do, you know, it's this sort of thing. So how does that sit with you, Brent?
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Who else?
This is Linda. This is really perfect because I have this conversation with Gabriel all the time about, first of all, owning whatever happens, like your piece of it, and then, like, telling the truth about things. And, you know, so now he has this thing of, you don't trust me. And the other day he did something. He said to me, you know, when are you ever going to trust me? And I said, when what you say and what you do are the same, then I can trust you. And
so Linda, can I ask a clarifying question right there?
Sure.
Is it that he has to do it 100% of the time in order for you to trust him, or does he have to do it once, or does he have to, you know, what does that really mean, that when he says what he does?
So that's a really good question. I don't think he can do 100% of the time, but he doesn't do it ever now.
Well, and so I think so I'll let you go back to your thought, but what's coming up for me is this sort of, if you're setting an expectation for him and he feels like, oh my gosh, I could never do this all the time. You know, it's that sort of how high does the bar feel for him versus how high are you intending to set the bar? Does that resonate?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. when you're talking to him about trusting you, what's the transparency piece of it, or the openness piece of it?
So I think I need to be more transparent on what I mean when I say that. Hmm. And that we need to be more transparent with each other just regarding, you know, how we're feeling, what's happening in the moment. Because I think he doesn't, I mean, he's 15, so that's part of all of this, I'm sure. But also, maybe he doesn't trust us to be able to tell us what's really happening.
Hmm. Susie, what comes up for you as Linda says that?
I'm kind of in the same place. I was actually sort of in my own thoughts also about my own transparency with Gabriel and being able to really share with him how I feel. A lot of times when I do, I kind of get nothing back, sometimes even like a blank stare. And so I've decided that he's not hearing me, but I realize that that's not necessarily the case at all. He may just not know how to react. And I also, that's where my thoughts were. Not that I didn't have thoughts about what Linda said, but I think it may all be connected in some way, this whole piece about trusting him and One of the things I got from this call a couple of months ago, I don't remember whether it was you or Elaine, but you said, don't say, I don't trust you. Say, I want to trust you. I want to have a relationship where I can trust you. So I've been doing that more. And, you know, sometimes what he says and what he does is the same, and mostly it isn't, but just keep working on it, I guess.
Yeah. Other thoughts around this idea of transparency and openness, maybe even what makes it hard?
I was going to mention, because it's funny you brought that up, because I've had issues with Chloe telling me I make it about her if I start talking about how, you know, I've felt that way before, or I, you know, I understand I've overreacted, grown, it's hard or whatever. And she'd say, why do you always got to make it about you? That's what she said to me. And then she told the counselor that. The counselor told me that really might not be the best way to approach things with her. And so I'm like,
compassion isn't her. She doesn't want you to say it about you. So how could you show her that you understand without saying, well, I've been there before?
I mean, other than being general and saying, you know, yeah, that's upsetting when somebody does that, or yeah, I could see why, or I mean, I don't know. I guess, like, if I can't tie it to my own personal experiences, then I would think you'd have to be just more general. Like, yeah, that usually makes people mad, or I could see why it made you mad, maybe.
Or it makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense that you, it sounds like you're really upset. It makes perfect sense that you would be upset. It makes perfect sense that you would be, you know, scared when that happened. You know, it's that sort of, you know, continue to keep it on her.
Right. And I think she thinks that I'm trying to say I know how she feels. You know what I mean? Mm. And in her mind, it's like, no, you don't know how I feel. Like, she'll tell me, your dad died, but your mom didn't. You can't understand, because my dad died when I was young, and I've told her before, you know, it's like, I know that's really hard. It was hard for me, too. Well, it's not the same. It's not your mother. It's like, okay.
So what do you think? So let me ask a question. Sorry. What is it for her? What is it about it for her that she wants to feel like it's her own experience and not something that you can completely relate to?
I don't know. I mean, like I said, I thought maybe it's because she felt like I was saying, I know how she felt, but you know, you can't really understand how anybody feels. Everybody's different and we have different experiences, but she just feels like, I don't understand. That's what she says. Anyways, she says, I don't get it.
Well, I'm wondering whether there's value for her in you not being able to understand. You know, it's just sort of,
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like this banner she's wearing. You know, it's like this sort of, no one gets me. I'm completely different. You know, it's just sort of, and it sounds a little bit like an independence sort of cry. Is that fair?
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely. She's very, very independent and very much feels that maybe she's misunderstood would be a word for it in general. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I guess the thing that's popping in my head is, you know, moving to champion role instead of, you know, so continue with the compassion and move to champion and say, I know you're going to figure this out. I have faith in you that you can figure this out.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because then it empowers her to be in charge of it instead of the therapist or you or whoever else, right?
Right. Yeah. I can see that for sure.
So what makes it hard to be transparent? Part of it I heard is like their reaction. So Susie, I think you said he just stares at me, right? What else makes it hard to be open and transparent?
Um I just might say that Xavier has used it against me. That is the way I felt at times when both of them, but more so him, when I'm more transparent about mistakes.
So what does that
apologizing
mean?
Apologizing or whatever. He'll, like, he told me, you're just, I don't even know what this whole conversation was, but I was being open about how, you know, I would apologize. I would say, you know, I'm sorry, I overreacted. You know, I was upset because of this or that. And so he's just like, yeah, you apologize, but then it's all about what we did wrong anyway. So what's the point in you apologizing? And he'll say, you get mad all the time anyway. What's the point? You know, he'll just bring up, if I apologize, he'll bring up my fault. And at different times, you know, and he's like, you're not consistent. You know, it's just like, I'm trying to apologize, or I'm trying to be, you know, open about the situation. And yeah, anyways.
So it sounds like it makes perfect sense, right? So if you're honest and you apologize and you say I screwed up, and then they don't, you know, they aren't generous with accepting the apology, then, you know, your brain goes, well, why did I bother to do this in the first place, right?
Yeah, because then he'll bring it up later on. It's like, well, you did that wrong, or you did this, and it's like, okay, you know, it's like I want to be transparent. I want to be honest so you can see, you know, obviously I'm not perfect, but I also don't want to be, he's just very, he can be critical. It's not just with me, honestly. It's not just me. He does the same thing with Chloe.
Well, it sounds like
and it's like, so in a way,
you
feel like it's going to be used against you. This is what it feels like.
Right.
If I'm honest,
well,
it'll
so
be
it sounds
used
like
against me later on.
It sounds like there's two things going on. One is, how do you stay open and transparent? And then the other is, how do you help
mm-hmm.
him to be less critical? And if you separate those two.
Right.
And not, you know, and then it gets back to kind of, how do you not take it personally when they get critical?
Right. And I just, as they get older, it's like they, I feel like you're being analyzed more, to be honest. When
mm-hmm.
they're kids, it was
mm-hmm.
different. When they were younger, they're 16,
yeah.
it's just different.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, who needs some help rolling up their sleeves? Linda and Susie, what's most kind of, what's the biggest obstacle on this medication piece for you guys?
For me, it would be getting him to really look and see if it's helping him, how he feels on it, because he doesn't reflect on his own. I think he doesn't reflect very well, you know, on his own stuff.
How able do you think he really is? I mean, is this a kid who's super self-aware and he's just not paying attention to the medications, or is he really not that self-aware?
I think it fluctuates. Sometimes he seems really self-aware, and other times it's like, oh, he's completely on to lunch.
Yeah. So it sounds like the problem you're trying to solve, that you want his collaboration on, is how do we figure out what impact the medications have on you on a day-to-day basis? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what if you present, what would happen if you presented that to him and say, what are three things we could do that would help us to know how the medication is impacting you on a daily basis, and come up with some ideas together?
Yeah, we can do that. I have in the past kind of said things like, you know, how does your heart feel? How does your head feel? But that might be just too abstract.
Yeah, well, and I think that that's the thing. It's like, if this is a kid who may not even notice, he's so hyper-focused on his stuff, or he doesn't pay attention to his body. I mean, it takes an enormous amount of maturity and self-awareness to be able to go, wow, my heart rate is up, you know, or I'm really not very hungry, or it's this sort of, you know, so you almost have to figure out what he can do independently and create some kind of structure or some sort of something. You know, so what are the things that will tell us if the medication is working? Well, I feel calm, you know, or I feel focused, or I feel whatever. You know, it's like, I'm able to do my chores. I'm able to do my homework, you know. And so what comes up for you as I say that?
Actually, I think that's really good. I think we have to have the conversation with him more regularly. I think that's what started just coming up for me. He did a couple of weeks ago. Something happened, and he was like, oh, my heart was beating out of my chest, which, you know, he got really clear about what was happening with him, which was really interesting. And so I think having the conversation more often so he starts to actually look and be more aware.
Yeah. He has said that the medication – oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Susie.
He has said from time to time when we ask him about the medication, like, you know, what does it help you? He says, yes, it helps me at school. It helps me focus. So he does have some notion about that, but the subtleties of, you know, the dosage and when he and all of that, it's really hard to get him to be any more explicit than, yeah, it helps me focus. That's about as good as
it
gets.
Well, it might be. Yeah, it might be interesting to try some experiments and see what he says. And I guess the question is, how do you enroll him in the process of even exploring it? You know, it's like, how do you get him excited about this idea of figuring out and playing detective and figuring out how well the medications are working?
Well, actually, using that language of playing detective can actually get him a little bit more excited about figuring this out.
Does he likes detective games?
Well, he likes games that have a little strategy. So maybe we have to do it that way.
Well, and this might be one of those questions that would be a good one to post in the forum, guys, and see whether other parents have had, you know, because a lot of us go through this sort of how do we help our kids determine is this medication working different than the other one, and you know, what do you try and what language and that sort of stuff. So it might be interesting to post something in the Facebook group and see what other thoughts other parents have. Are you willing to do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah. And I think that's the piece of it, is that if he's clear on what the goal is, if the goal is, hey, let's figure out what's different, and or, you know, begin to notice what's different, I think that's the piece of it. And then the other thing that's coming up for me is transparency and openness. Hey, here's what I notice. Here's what I find, you know, it's like paying attention to your own bodies and being able to notice, wow, my heart rate was really up, and just starting to use that body aware language in a different way. It would help him to begin to notice his body differently. So if you say, wow, my hair really stood up on end when that, you know, when the plate crashed because I was scared, you know, it's that sort of, how do you begin to teach and model body awareness, which is a tool ultimately that we all need to develop at some point, but he needs it now so that he can help give you feedback on whether the medication is working.
Right. Well, and that's really good because I've been doing some different things with my diet. So I've been really talking about what effect I see sugar has on my body. And because I've eliminated sugar, and when I have it, there are dramatic things I notice in my body. So we've been talking about that a little. So maybe that will help, too, if I keep talking about those kinds of things.
Awesome. Cool. So, Brent, what's coming up for you around this issue of honesty?
I like the idea of just sharing with Addie times that we have struggled with truth. And there is a little hesitation that she's going to say, see, you do it too. And And I can talk her through that. I know how to do that. But I do think that it's an interesting alignment with the topic and her issues. My plan was to share with her, and this was Holly's idea, about a guy that I dealt with when I was about her age. I went to a private school for 1 year. And long story short, the guy that ran the school was a con man and stole a bunch of money and took off in the middle of the night, and how that had shaped and scarred my trust in his type of in his role for years and years and years, and kind of talk to her and see if she had a similar background, and then talk to her about, you know, this is the effect that dishonesty has, and you don't want to do that, you know.
Well, and I guess that part of it, you know, logic and explanation is one of the tools that we as parents have in our toolbox that we tend to pull out all the time, right? Well, this is why we would do it this way, and we have long, lengthy explanations and sermons or speeches or whatever it is that kind of walk our kids through. And so I guess the question I want to ask is how well does that type of feedback work with Allie? It may work really well, and it may be that she hears you kind of like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know how she'll receive that.
So she's the kind of kid that sits pretty attentively when you're telling a story or giving a shot, or is she kind of zoning out?
She was the kind of kid that did that. Now I'm in the eye rolling stage with the subtle head shake, like this guy's an idiot with just about anything I say. But I do think she listens.
Well, and that, yeah, so the question is she listening and rolling her eyes, or is she checking out and you know, play with it? I think the other thing that kind of popped into my head is, you know, how could you use some humor? If she's at the eye-rolling stage, sometimes if you're sarcastic and humorous, they kind of go, wait, what was that?
Yeah, that's true.
How could you bring some humor into this?
I guess I could, I don't know, maybe tell her some ridiculous lie. See if she can, and say, look, it's not as hard to tell as you think it is when somebody's not being honest with you. Maybe tie it back in that way.
Yeah. And the other thing that it might be, you know, it might be interesting to talk to her about is what is it that makes it easier to tell the truth? You know,
okay.
and seeing if she, you know, and when she does tell the truth, you know, jump up and down. I mean, you guys do this already, right? It's sort of when she says, when she tells you something that you think was probably a little hard for her to say, thank you so much for being honest about that and letting me know what happened. I really appreciate your letting me know. You know, it's that sort of focus on what you want more than focusing on what you don't want.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
Other thoughts or concerns?
No.
Brett, I guess part of what it sounds like you guys are at a place where you, I know that lying is really bumps up against the family value. Are you at, how much are you at a place where you can see that it's not something that she's doing necessarily purposefully or that she's doing, you know, to be unkind? I mean, how able are you to see that this is part of, this is something that's just really hard for her?
I think I'm clear on that. And I also think this is an age thing and a station of life that's not going to be long-term. Our concern is to address it and get through it as quickly as we can and not have it become something that is a positive experience for her to lie. But she doesn't carry that as a long-term behavior.
Well, and this is one of those things, I think you guys have all heard my speech about consequences, but lying is one of those things that parents often will say, I don't want to send the message that it's okay. And so, when our kids are having a hard time being honest, There's two things going on. You might want to have a consequence in place to send the message that it's never okay to not tell the truth. And they may need help being honest and changing their behavior. And so just, you know, the consequence may not actually help them to change the behavior. Does that resonate?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody else just join us? It looks like somebody from San Diego. 619 area code.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's Teresa, but I can't really talk. I'm just on the call. I hope it's okay.
You just did a listen?
Earlier.
Okay.
That's okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. So we dug in a little bit about the lying. We dug in a little about the meds. Shari, what are some of the things that you've been thinking about with regard to Chloe and the rest of the summer?
Well, I mean, I definitely want to, like I said, I want to actually implement something, whatever, something that we can start working on with time with her. And just based on our conversation we've had, I think I want to work more on, like you said, like more championing her versus trying to identify, because that somehow makes her feel, because she wants to be independent doing it, like you said. And, you know, it makes so much sense because she's always been super independent. It just didn't occur to me that that would be why she might react that way. So that actually kind of changes my perspective quite a bit on that. She's wanting to do it on her own, possibly wanting to do it on her own in a sense, or me feel like, make her feel like she can, I guess. So I don't know, I'd like to work on that aspect of it with her more.
I love that. I love that. So how else can I help? We've gotten through a lot of stuff today, and you guys are all really moving pretty quickly.
This is Julie. I'm in a place where I can talk now. I'm sorry I couldn't in that exact moment, and I'm sorry I'm late today, but I'm happy to be here, and I'm appreciative and love you guys. So it's been a while.
Awesome.
Since the vacations and
things. Thanks, Julie.
So thank you.
Julie. Well, we were talking about openness and transparency, and it's a lot of conversation about, you know, kind of how to bring that into challenges with dishonesty and challenges with, you know, independence and those sorts of things. So it's been a really good conversation. Anyone else get some value out of doing some laser coaching? I'm happy to talk about whatever. We've got some time here, so I'm happy to talk about whatever's coming up for you guys.
This is Linda.
Go for it.
And maybe this goes along with the whole thing about being a little bit more independent with his meds, too. So I'm trying to have him be more independent in things that I do, like making his breakfast because it's cereal or a bagel or something. And he can do that. He knows how to do it. But it's interesting. We had friends over last night, and the friends were saying to him, so where's the paper plate for Christmas? And he was like, I don't know. And I thought, is it really he doesn't know, or he's just kind of brushing it off?
And he has
conversations with me about, I think he doesn't know. Because I said to him, you really don't know where the paper plates are? Like after they were gone. And he's like, I don't know.
Well, let's think about the executive function. But hang on a second. So let's think about the executive function it takes in the moment when somebody goes, hey, Gabriel, where are the paper plates? So when somebody does that, it's probably out of the blue, right? So he's thinking about something else. He's doing something else. He needs to stop what he's doing long enough to make sure he really understood what they were asking. Transition from whatever he's thinking about or doing into question-response mode. And then remember where the paper plates are, because he probably doesn't use the paper plates very often, which requires working memory. And being social, which may or may not be hard for Gabriel. I don't remember. So what comes up for you as I walk through all those executive functions?
That's a lot of stuff. He's probably stuck on the stopping what he's doing so he can listen to the question.
Great, especially if it's an adult and he's just the bystander, right? So it's like a lot of our kids are like, when I was a kid, I was like really intently listening because I wanted to learn what the adults were talking about and I wanted to be part of the conversation. But a lot of our kids aren't like that. They're just kind of in the room but not really present. And it sounds like Gabriel might be one of those kids, fair?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay, so how do you know that? He's like what, Linda?
Friends, and he was. These were like friends, and he was like. I mean, that was. The question was out of the blue for him, for sure.
Okay, so what's your real concern underneath this situation?
So my concern is I want to be able to treat him independently, but then. And have him be more independent. But then he doesn't follow directions, he doesn't follow through, doesn't know things like where is the paper plate. But yet he has a conversation with me like, I'm not five. And I said, I know you're not five, but you need help with this.
Yeah. So I'm going to go back. So I don't know. Right. So I'm going to go back to the four roles of parenting. And I imagine Elaine talks about this a lot in this group, but to point you guys back to the webinar we did in February around independence, where we talk about the four levels of parenting, directing, modeling, helping, and championing, or kind of the bottom line of each of those four levels for me. And so what you're describing is, you know, you can understand level one works. If I tell him everything to do, he can do it and follow my directions. And then we say we want them to be independent, which a lot of us in our head want them to be all the way at level four, which is he can just do it all himself. And the reality is that there's several steps between you telling him every step of what to do and him being able to do every single step in sequence independently. And that's where the work really is that sort of how do you get him enrolled in the fact that there's a process for learning it. And I think about, you know, when I remember being a kid and I was learning how to cook and my mom, you know, at the beginning, I was fiercely independent. You can only imagine that, right? But, you know, my mom would cook with me and then she would sit at the kitchen table and she always had something else to do. But she told me as an adult, she's like, I used to just sit there and bite my lip because it was just so hard to watch you struggle or figure out how to ask a question or those sorts of things. And so it's all of this stuff, but she was there in the middle. And I think that that's the piece of it is what's the middle ground, Linda, when you want him to become more independent and not just focus on being independent. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I actually am trying to, yes.
Yeah.
And I actually do think about that in the moment. But he's very resistant to support.
Okay.
And so
if he's resistant to support, go ahead.
I'm sorry, what?
No, I said he's very resistant to support. Was there more to that? I'm sorry.
No. I mean, he is everywhere.
So
in school, everywhere.
Yeah. So if he's resistant to support, then you know, then maybe the support comes kind of after things haven't worked, right? So sort of, you know, it's like instead of kind of watching him and helping him while he's doing it at first, you know, let him flounder a little bit. What changes when he flounders?
He gets mad and says, "Forget it."
Hmm. Well, it might be interesting, because you said he's pretty self-aware, to have a conversation with him and say, you know, there are times when I notice that you don't want me to help you, but then when you have a hard time doing it on your own, you get really frustrated and you throw in the towel. What do you think about trying to do some of this stuff together so that you can learn and so that the next time you can do it on your own?
Yeah.
So you're enrolling him in the idea that he's not just going to magically learn how to do that overnight. And so I'm thinking back to this whole conversation of transparency. If you think about a time where you've had to learn something, and what's the teaching model? It's like watch one, do one, teach one, learn one. I don't remember what there's like some language to kind of the sequential nature of learning. You know, but if you share with them, it's like, you know, when I learned X, Y, and Z, you know, the first time they showed me how to do it, and the second time we did it together, and then the third time I did it and they watched me, and then the fourth time I was fine and I did it on my own, but it took me four times to learn how to do it completely by myself. And there really is four steps, and maybe that's part of what you begin to teach and to model. If I'm trying to learn how to do something new, there's four stages. I'm going to watch, I'm going to do with you, I'm going to do independently, and you are going to watch me, and then I'm going to do it on my own. How do you set the stage with him that helping's not a bad thing?
Well, we have the conversation that everybody needs help. And I often say to him, I need your help. I can't do everything. I can't do it myself. I really need you to help me. So
what's coming up for me as you're saying that. Yeah, but so as you're saying that, what's coming up for me is that there's a difference between helping and learning, right? And
yeah.
And I think that that's the piece of it is kind of like, how do you set the stage for the fact that there's some things that he's still learning to do completely independently. And maybe that's the conversation. Where are you with cooking, you know, putting out the cereal? Are you still learning how to do it completely? Or are you, you know, 100% of the time you do it completely on your own?
You know, and it might be interesting to have a conversation with him about what things do you do independently on your own so he actually feels some success.
Love that. Okay. Other thoughts before we move into our final question? Been a great conversation today. We're on page, I think, 63. Four questions are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? Jot down some notes, and I'd love to hear at least one aha and one action item from everybody.
So it's Linda. I'll go because that conversation just now kind of went aha for me.
Okay.
So the aha was maybe he doesn't know what he can do. And maybe he doesn't think that he can do anything on his own. And so he's frustrated and he's fighting back. So I think it would be really interesting to actually make the list of all the things he does on his own.
Love that.
Yeah, Susie, I was listening very closely to the conversation you guys just had, and it was, I took away the same thing, Linda, and really excited to have that kind of conversation with him. and also really understanding the process of learning and distinguishing learning from helping. It was a great conversation, and I can see a path forward with him now. So thanks for that.
Awesome. Brent, what about you?
I don't know how to phrase it properly, but some things that come to mind when we talked about riding in the truck with Addie and she's saying, you know, you're fake and you're a liar and that's not real. It really hit me that she really doesn't wrap her head around how I can manage that. And I think it's a real good, strong plan for me to say, well, this is how we develop and this is what we do. And I want you to get to a point where you can manage your anger and your feelings to where you're not lying or saying hateful things. And that's kind of off topic from the lying, but that's what's jumping off the page at me. And then our action plan, I think is, and again, I don't know that I have the vocabulary for it, is to use past experiences to kind of guide Addie into owning up to it when we catch her in a lie and really, really celebrate when she is in a lie.
Yeah. Oops, did you cut off or did you just get quiet?
I got quiet, sorry.
Oh, okay. No, okay. And I love that sort of focus. That's always what I say. Focus on what you want. And, you know, there's a lot of parent strategies that say just ignore the unwanted behavior and celebrate the heck out of the wanted behavior. So is there anything in particular you want to ask from Holly when you loop back with her, Brett?
Not at the moment. I'm sure I'll be giving her a full debriefing later and answer a lot of questions. So I'll be able to update you next time.
Cool. Shiree, what about you?
I think the aha is, like I said earlier, just realizing that maybe part she's just wanting to be independent in it, and I just need to reassure her why I feel that she can do it, or, you know, like you said, championing her. And then the action, I mean, that'll be part of my action plan too, but also to, to do something regularly over the next week, to do something towards spending time with her. So.
All right. Julie, you haven't been on here very long. Any ahas or a check-in or anything?
No, yeah. So many. All it takes is a second, right, to be here and get so much out of it. For me, really. So thank you all. I've missed these calls, and just being here in itself is grounding and reassuring. So I appreciate hearing all of you. And I can't wait to go. I can listen to these calls, correct? These are recorded? This group call?
They are recorded.
Right?
As long as I remember to hit record, and I think I did. Yes,
that's great. And this topic is, I think, important for me. And I love your reminder of the four steps. And even in terms of my daughter, Sarah, who I'm usually focused on these calls, that her younger brother yesterday was trying to fold a towel and couldn't really do it so well, but he was trying so hard. And just that reminder of those steps and really getting conscious for all of my kids, no matter where they're at. Helping them with whatever things they're at, and that reminder was really a gift. And I'm going to go back, and we're going to do some towel lessons together. So, thank you.
There you go.
I
love that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Great call today. Any parting comments? Thank you all for being here. I love being with this group. It's always good to talk to you and be here. Next week is Palooza week, so make sure that if you haven't registered already that you do. There's lots of great interviews and experts and things like that that we have been focused on for the last several months, and then we'll have an office hour call the first week of August, and then we're back to PSS the week of the 12th. So we'll talk to y'all soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everyone.